And welcome now to the midday for Tuesday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we have a little bit of a learning curve to go up here because we're going to have something a little bit different, but I think you'll find it delightful, too. And it's all tied into a Dikshitar and Beethoven Melharmony Festival. And first, we better find out what that is from Maestro Andrew Sewell of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. A little bit a field for your chamber orchestra, isn't it?
That's right, Norman. About 6 weeks ago, we were approached by Tsitsavina and the Melharmony Foundation here in Madison about the concept of highlighting two, shall we say, dynasties of music, the Western culture and the Indian classical music culture. And it's been a fascinating learning curve for me as well to learn that so much history beyond the Western musical culture is tied up in Indian classical music.
And all those notes in between the notes.
Yes, and I'm sure that Ravi will be able to explain more, but, you know, just to know that, for me personally, to know that, of course, there are 72 ragas and all kinds of different harmonies. And what this concert is, it's going to be bringing together the WCO by highlighting the fact that Ludwig van Beethoven and his contemporary in the Indian classical music scene, which was Dikshitar, these two are coming together. Melharmony is a combination of melodic and harmony. So the concert that we're doing at on November the 8th at Mills Auditorium, 7 p.m., at the School of Music, will feature three aspects. The Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra Quartet will be playing a Beethoven string quartet, the harp, and then the middle section will be Ravi Karan doing some solo classical Indian music, and then in the third final portion will be the orchestra, as well as Ravi as a soloist, performing three pieces which Ravi has arranged by Dikshitar, of some songs of his. And they have different titles that he's put to them.
Well, welcome to the midday, Ravi.
It's my pleasure. Good afternoon.
And we have to separate your name from your instrument, because Chitravina Ravi Karan,
yeah.
Part of that is your name and part of that's the instrument you're going to be playing.
Yeah. In India, sometimes, you know, musicians are known by the name of the instrument that they play. It's more like a prefix. It becomes like a part of the prefix of their names. So the Chitravina is a 20 or 21 stringed slide. And the first reference to that goes way back in about, you know, 2nd century BC or so. It's mentioned in the treatises as a 7-string instrument, which is played with a slide. But now, of course, the instrument has evolved over the centuries. And today we have, you know, 3 layers of strings, with 6 on top, and then there are resonant strings as well. Oh, so it's sure. A very colorful instrument.
And when you say a slide, that means that if you have a series, let's say what we'd call an octave, you actually have an infinite number of notes.
Yes. It's like a mathematical number line, and you can really have infinite number of notes between any two notes. So, and we don't really, you know, we don't vocalize them, we don't categorize them, but they are there.
They are there. And now, to what degree are the pieces you play improvised? I mean, I've heard some, you know, Indian music that went on for a very, very long time, and mm-hmm. I was impressed, I have to say, above all, with the stamina of the players.
Yeah.
But these things can go on for a very long time, can't they?
Yes. Actually, see, there are two systems of classical tradition in India. One is the North Indian system, which also is a little bit influenced by the Persian system. So that is like the Hindustani music. And then in the southern regions, you have what is known as the Carnatic system, which is more like as it was originally created many years back. But that's still an amalgamation of the Sanskrit and the Tamil cultures, which are there, you know. So in Carnatic music concerts, you'll typically find that the balance between compositions and improvisation is about 50-50. Whereas in Hindustan,
how do you know when to stop?
I think when we are taught, we are also taught a lot of sense of balance between variety and proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically a good artist will have that sense of discernment as to how to really, you know,
resolve it.
Yes, resolve it. And but there can be exceptions. So, you know, some days you may really take your mood, follow your mood and play a little more improvs. But typical balance would be like, you know, ideal in Carnatic is 50-50.
Mm-hmm. And so the instrument that you have brought with you, is
the Chitravina.
Chitravina, as you have described, and this will be, I think, the first time we've had in the midday a performer who is sitting on the floor barefoot.
yes.
But that's just the way you play it.
That's the way we play it because, see, unlike the steel guitar and some of the other systems of, you know, even bottleneck guitar and all that, where they can actually have the slide
you know,
on their little finger and just even play standing up, this one actually is a much heavier instrument. It's better to sit on the floor, and it's easier to sit on the floor, and then typically that's the way most of the Indian classical artists perform, even sitar and other instruments.
You have to keep fairly nimble, don't you, to be sitting on the floor like that for so long.
Yeah, that's one of the first things that we learn to do, sit for hours together in one place and practice.
Not only that, Norman, but they haven't memorized about 1,200 different songs in their memory. That's a lot of songs, I have to say.
I would not ask for 1,201, Andrew. I'd never ask for more than that.
That's only good artists. I think even anything like about, say, a couple of hundred, 300 is good still for beginners and middle level.
I would accept that also. Yeah. So this first piece that you're going to play for us, Ravi, is what is it?
I'll just play a short preview of the piece, one of the pieces that we are going to do. It's called Shrikanthima theme of Muthuswami Dikshitar. And I should also highlight here that probably Dikshitar was the first to really try an east-west fusion, even in the 1700s, early 1800s.
Oh, really?
So he was influenced by the British orchestras which were there in India at that time. So, you know, so he really composed some pieces with using the major scale, but using Sanskrit lyrics. So you know, it was his way. But of course, I don't know whether he really collaborated with any of the orchestras, but he at least made this attempt, and that has been documented even by some of the European scholars.
So this will be a real fusion of East and West.
What I'm choosing is actually one of Dikshitar's pure Carnatic pieces.
Oh, it is. Okay.
For this particular thing. So I actually melharmonized that. Means I created some harmonic parts for the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And using rules of the particular raga that it's actually been composed in. For raga is more like a mode and a scale. One of the 7.2 million modes that are there in Indian music.
7.2 million.
Of which, luckily, we only need to learn about 300, which are performed. And the 72 scales that Andrew Sewell mentioned was the 72 parent scales, like your major scale and minor scale. So what I'm going to play is the 58 parent scale, which is called Hemavati. And in the concert, it's actually, I've titled this, it as Snow Princess.
Snow Princess.
Yeah. So I'm just going to play a preview of that raga. Just slight improvs, probably, which you may not hear in the concert, but it'll just give a glimpse.
All right.
So
how
many minutes would, like, just a couple of minutes or?
Oh, let's say 4 minutes.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Now, is that typical to end with almost sounds like a pentatonic scale, Ravi Karan?
Oh, no, that's just a sort of a flourish, that resonant strings.
I can almost see, you know, glass bead curtains.
That's part of the instrument's color. Once in a while I use it.
It's incredible to see you work and the nuances that you do. I'm very curious to know. Obviously, it's years and years of training and playing, and so what do young people do who want to learn this instrument, and what is the kind of the pathway, if I may ask?
It's typically, I think, in Indian music, a lot of these have lyrics, so a good student is encouraged to learn a little bit of vocal first, mm-hmm. so that he actually knows the articulation even when he plays instruments. And so then they, very good gurus used to insist on 12, 14 hours of practice in the initial stages.
A day?
Yeah. Ooh, especially if you want to be a good instrumentalist. I mean, there have been artists who used to work like that. And but of course, if they have school and all that, today I tell my, when in my school days, I used to do about 6 hours of practice. But holidays, another 4 hours or so. So now, of course, I tell my student about 3-4 hours at least to work.
Now, is there a point, we talked about this earlier, Ravi, is there a point at which you get to put this name of this instrument in front of your chicharvina, in front of your name?
I don't put it at all.
So it's not like getting a doctorate and you suddenly get to call yourself PhD.
No, it's just the listening public who sort of confer it on you over a period of time. It's more just, it becomes almost like a convention after some time. And if you're known for a few years, then they'll start referring you.
You just wait for it to kind of, by osmosis, just confer itself upon you.
Yeah, sometimes.
And where are you based?
I'm based in the South Indian city of Madras.
Oh, Madras.
Now it's called Chennai, of course. It's a beautiful coastal city.
And how many players would there be in a place like Madras? Must be quite a few.
Madras, actually, in fact, even in India, chitravina is slightly rare.
Is it?
It's not as popular as, say, even the flute or the violin. The Western violin is very, very popular in India.
Really?
It was introduced by the brother of this composer, whose honor we are doing now on November 8th, Muthuswami Dikshitar. His brother, Baluswami Dikshitar, is responsible for having introduced the violin into Carnatic music in late 1700s. And it's seen in almost every Carnatic concert.
Oh, really? The violin?
Yes, the violin.
Even though
slightly different tuning, though. They'll tune it more to the basic and the tonic, and the tonic and the fifth in 2 octaves. Mm. And because they'll also play with more slides, microtonal slides and oscillations, so they also sit down and play with a different posture.
Oh, I suppose so.
But
how about another one?
You sure, why not?
What would it be before you go over there?
I'll probably... Do you want me to play something from the November 7th, 8th concert? Small...
That's
I love the fact that you start plucking, and that's an amazing just physicality to this music. Is once it really gets ramped up, it's interesting.
Okay, so I'll try and play a little bit of a piece based on a major scale. It's a pentatonic based on the major scale, but without the 4th and the 6th in it.
Okay. It's called what?
The piece in the concert is called as Master of the Mountain, but the raga is actually Hamsa Dhwani.
Okay.
So I'll just play a little bit of that. Maybe a couple of minutes?
Sure. It's kind of sublime, isn't it? You can really kind of settle into, sink into that kind of music.
Thank you. It's actually, I personally have felt that both Carnatic music and Western classical music are highly character-building systems, which really demand and build you as an individual. So I think
sure,
I have a great respect for both traditions. I do work with a lot of jazz, pop, and so
do
many
you?
Other systems. But
really?
You play jazz? I work with them because I collaborate a lot of jazz musicians, blues artists, with even Chinese, Brazilian, so many different.
I've had
the opportunity. So,
and of course, in this country, it was for better or worse, it was the Beatles who brought a lot of that sensibility into pop music.
Yes.
And then
definitely.
Ravi Shankar, of course, became wildly famous, and his daughter also.
Yes.
I actually saw her perform in Boston many years ago.
I had the honor of being tested by Ravi Shankar
really?
When I was about 2 years old.
When you were 2 years old. How did
yeah,
that
that's
work?
When my father first launched me as a musician. And so Ravi Shankar was one of those who first tested me. So at that time...
You probably don't remember.
I don't remember.
even with the great Ravi Shankar, but at the age of two, you wouldn't remember. But how would that work, to test a two-year-old for musical
Basically,
ability?
At that time, they used to do shows of me identifying different ragas rendered by any musician. So I could sort of identify about 325 ragas, about 175 different time cycles, talas, and all those kind of things, different composers, then some, sing and demonstrate some technical ornamentation, so different kinds of things. So they used to have special shows in those days. Now it's, of course, there in the media and all that. It is very well documented.
Is it? Okay. I suppose on YouTube you'd find
it should be
a two-year-old taking his test out.
Yeah, exactly. Much of this was in public. This was all in big organizations.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they used to be in public shows. These were like typically in different cities, Madras, Bangalore, Bombay, and all that.
Well, let me ask you this then, Ravi. Other members of your family, is it just assumed that you're going to be able to play this instrument, or are there other family members who don't
have it? I have several students. I have several disciples who are playing well.
Mm-hmm.
I would say about three or four are particularly performing already for the last few years, and a bunch of others are learning. But a lot of other students of mine learn vocal, flute, violin, so many other things. I basically teach music, so.
In general, of all kinds, all instruments. Do you have time for one more short one?
If you want, sure.
Okay.
And before that, let me also say that it's been an honor working with Maestro Sewell and the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra for this thing.
Thank you. Yeah.
Also a pleasure to be on this show with you.
And just before we, and actually while you're making the transition back over to the floor there, reiterate that this concert, we can describe it to some extent, but after that you just have to be there to know what it's all about. But it's November 8th, which is Sunday. 7 o'clock, Mills Concert Hall, UW Madison Humanities Building, And it's a combination of Indian and Western, with Dikshitar being the Indian contemporary of Beethoven, and those two will be represented in this Melharmony Festival, it's called, on Sunday evening. And so one more now from... Okay, sure. Let that last tone die out. Cut that short. And from over there on the floor, Rodri, does that have a name, or did you just improvise that, or what was that?
Actually, this is an improvisation based on a raga called Dvijayavanti. It's one of the, again, based on the major scale, but with a couple of foreign notes like the minor third and minor sixth also thrown into it.
I'll take your word for that. All right. Well, thanks for stopping by and sharing some of your music with us. My guest today has been Chicho Ravina Ravikaran, and he will be performing with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, and Maestro Andrew Sewell, the conductor for the occasion, also with us today. Mm-hmm. And sounds fascinating.
Pleasure. Thanks, Norman.
Next stop will be our 12:30 quiz question here on WPR.